Something I've been into lately is a certain sound. As you know, if you've heard previous episodes, I have a kind of obsession with the late 90s slash early 2000s. And what I've been fascinated with lately, like just recently, is this kind of nu metal revival sound. I don't know if I can call it a full-on revival, but it's this kind of like music that's being made now that kind of is a throwback to the nu metal of that era, or borrows from it, or just kind of reaches back to it. I have this thing right now, and I don't know why it's happening. And by the way, I'm smoking right now, so that's maybe why it sounds weird. Smoking weed, to be specific. So I didn't like a lot of the bands from that time when it was happening. Most of the bands, actually. So I didn't like Linkin Park, Evanescence. I don't know, things like this. But I loved Limp Bizkit. I was obsessed with Limp Bizkit. And just hearing that kind of sound now, with even like the DJ kind of record, not record scratching, but I don't know, some DJ shit, and like, I don't know, just that nu metal sound. It just sounds good when it's like interpolated into another song or used within the context. It's like reframing it or something. It's like putting it in a new context, that sound. And I just think it's interesting. So, to give you examples, 100 Gex does this, especially on one song in particular. Hold on a second. I'll pull it up so I get the name right. It's called Billy Knows Johnny, or Billy Knows Jamie. It's track 6 on the new album, 10,000 Gex, which I'm kind of getting into. Took me a little bit. They're kind of 100 Gex are kind of an acquired taste. And then Rina Sakayama, I want to say Sawayama. Where is it? Hold on, it's coming up. Rina Sawayama. So she does this a little bit too. And I think this ties into like this kind of millennial culture of like, and now Gen Z culture of like taking things that are considered bad or crappy, like within pop culture, and reinterpreting them or using them in a different way, which I think can be interesting. I think of like Riff Raff, like that rapper, like, I don't know. It's just like they take, there's like some hair metal vibes in terms of like the look, and just as an example of like things that something that's considered like crappy or bad or shitty within popular culture or popular art or popular music, but then kind of using it in a different way that's sort of artistic, using it in sort of like an artistic way. I think that's pretty much all I have to say about it. It is sort of like, not to bring Tarantino into it, but it is sort of like how Quentin Tarantino, what he does with the references and the dialogue, turning it into an art form, but also taking things from the past and just interpreting them and putting them within the context of his world or the world that he's creating, which is something that artists probably have always done. But it's interesting to see how they're doing it in music now. This is Video Nasties. What you've just heard is a repeat of the episode from last night, which posted accidentally. So I apologize, sort of. I mean, you kind of got like a bonus episode there, and it does have a number of listens, so I'm not taking it down, but it was not meant to be posted last night. I have step family visiting the Cape, and I was busy yesterday. Had some family time. Some pizza. I was working all day during the day, and then that night I just smoked and kind of passed out, and also watched a pretty awesome, cool movie that I'll talk about now, which is, I think, called Two Warriors. It's another Sammo Hung movie, another Golden Harvest movie. This one's a little earlier, though, I think. This is like mid-70s. This is 1976, so we're going back. This is like true, like, heyday Kung Fu, and it's cool. I mean, there's a lot of action in this movie. It's a lot of, there are these extended fight scenes, amazing kung fu. I like Sammo Hung's kung fu, actually. I like his foot and leg work. He, a appears in the movie. He doesn't star in it, but he kind of plays the Sammo Hung part, which is like sort of like the comedic supporting character, sort of the comedic relief. It starts out the way a lot of these movies start out, which is like him. Yeah, I mean, it's literally every one of these movies. It's just like him as another kind of like goofy archetype, or just some kind of like somebody on the fringes of society, I guess, is maybe how it would be described now. But he's kind of the goofy guy. And it starts out with him in character, and then he interacts with this other person who's the more straight person who ends up being the lead, maybe. I don't know. I'd have to study these films more, but I just remember the last one I watched. Was it Knockabout? No, in that one he plays a beggar, and then there's the other one where he's like the man child and he's hanging out with a bunch of kids, and this one he's like this, he's got this big bald spot on the top of his head, and he's maybe some kind of like pastry salesman. He's trying to like sell some buns or something. I mean, I could be making that up, but I just remember he's like trying to sell something to this guy in the opening scene. Anyway, yeah, some interesting scenes. I like the way it's shot. And Don't Talk While You're Eating, I remember that was in the movie. I remember a guy wolfing down on a bun, like a pork bun or something. So anyway, yeah, I was pretty stoned and pretty tired, so I don't remember a lot of this movie, but that's a little overview. Fell asleep, didn't finish it, but that should give you an idea of Two Warriors, if that is indeed what it's called. Shaw Brothers, they'll always be my favorite. They're kind of like, I mean, I'm sure I've quoted this on the podcast before, but RZA said he did a commentary for, I think it was 36 Chambers, probably, the 36th Chamber of Shaolin. It'd be appropriate for him to do a commentary for that. So he said that with Shaw Brothers, they were like the Frosted Flakes to like the Corn Flakes of like other Kung Fu movies. So like, yeah, other Kung Fu movies are good, you know, nourishing, give you some fiber. But then you watch a Shaw Brothers movie, or like you see the Shaw Brothers movie sitting over there, and it's kind of sparkling. It's got some sugar on it. And he said, yeah, I care to try that. So it's like, with Frosted Flakes or Shaw Brothers, it's like, yeah, I care to try that. So, yeah, Shaw Brothers, I don't know. It's just, like, elevated. It's just, like, the sets, the way it's shot. It's all very kind of, like, beautiful and ornate. This is a little more, I mean, this is Golden Harvest. I think maybe they tended to use like natural locations more. It's almost like, they're almost like grittier than Shaw Brothers movies or something. Shaw Brothers movies are like very decorated and very designed, very much set-based. Whereas, as I said, with these, it seems to be, there seems to be a lot more of a use of natural locations and also more like natural, more natural photography. Like Shaw Brothers is, you know, shot in Shaw scope. Their movies are shot in Shaw scope, so they're these big widescreen, beautiful vistas. Whereas this is kind of more like straightforward and borderline realistic, the way it's shot. What I was talking about earlier in the episode, just to give you some context for it, is this early 2000s sound that I'm obsessed with. I was at work, and hold on, I just lost it because I'm high. Oh yeah, I got it. Destiny's Child came on, Survivor, and just the sound, that production, like that beat, that sound. Also like the beginning of that Christina Aguilera song, Genie in a Bottle. It's got that weird, like almost Radiohead esque opening. Anyway, yeah, that song, and then there's that J-Lo song that the version she did with Ja Rule of I'm Real. It sounds great. It sounds better than ever. This kind of like opens up another conversation about like, it's interesting to hear and to see. Well, yeah, I mean, all of it, but in this case, it's interesting to hear what ages well. So I was thinking about this with AM by Arctic Monkeys. Like, that album sounds amazing now. That's kind of like their, I mean, it is their biggest album in terms of popularity. It's kind of like their pop album in a weird way. It's like their most accessible and commercial. But it just sounds great now. Like, it just sounds better than ever for some reason. In fact, when I was at work again yesterday, two songs from it came on, and they were both B-sides. Fireside, which is the song that I'm, like, really into now. It just, like, I came back from lunch, and that song was, like, just starting, and it was, like, perfect timing, and it just sounded so good. I'm just in the back washing dishes, singing that song. Felt good. So, Fireside, and then Knee Socks came on. I was like, what the fuck is happening? And I had just listened to the album in its entirety. So that was interesting. And then, yeah, just this early 2000s production, like, just that sound. I don't know. I'm just obsessed with it for some reason. So, Nerd also recently played on an episode of Time Crisis, their song Rockstar. It just sounds, like, really good. I don't know. I mean, I guess I kind of came of age around that period, so maybe that's part of why I'm obsessed with it right now. And I'm also kind of thinking about, you have, like, the hip-hop, whatever you want to call it, R&B, soul, sound, the production of that time, starting to bring in drum machines and starting to use Pro Tools in a certain way. Not that these things hadn't been done before, although Pro Tools was fairly new at that time, I think. Anyway, so there's that, there's the hip-hop, R&B, soul, and then there's, like, the new metal stuff that I talked about earlier. And then, what happening concurrently is, like, the birth of this, like, next wave of alternative rock music, which, I don't know, again, I was at work and I was thinking about, a Modest Mouse song came on, so Float On, which is the pinnacle of indie rock breaking and becoming popular music, that song specifically, I would argue. So, I was thinking, like, what year did it break? I would say it was, like, around 2003, 2004. I think, like, The Killers, 2004 was when it, like, kind of, like, became popular. And they actually ended up becoming the biggest band out of everybody. They all became millionaires, The Killers. And they're a rock band. You know, in the 2000s. Which, I mean, back then you could still make money. But anyway. shit. Kind of lost my train of thought. I don't know. Maybe that's it for now. See you at the movies. Okay, I remember what I was going to say. It exists in the space, like, before, I mean, The Strokes' Is This It had come out, and it was, like, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Interpol, the, you know, the stuff happening in New York. And by the way, if you read Meet Me in the Bathroom, which is an oral history of this time, you can get some more information about this. I'm drawing some of this information from what I read in that book, even though I haven't finished it because I don't really like oral histories. But anyway, it's a really interesting book if you're interested in that time. That's specifically New York. But they talk about other bands, talk about The Killers and stuff. So, fuck, I keep losing my train of thought. It's too early. I'm too stoned. Yeah, okay, so it exists in the space, like, right before, like, the indie rock boom, and, like, but it was concurrent to indie, alternative rock, whatever you want to call it, gaining momentum. And then, yeah, so you had the new metal stuff, you had J-Lo, you had Destiny's Child, then you had, like, Eminem, and then you also had rock gaining steam. It was just a really interesting time.
This has been a production of Reptilian.